Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. My name is Jose Albino, your Life Purpose and Empowerment Coach, and I'm your host for this afternoon and every other Wednesday here on the Life Coach Radio Network, and in some instances, our sister network, International Life Coach Radio Network, as well. My show is typically at 7:30 every other Wednesday, but in order to deservingly fit in our very busy guests, we move the time up just for this particular show. But we will resume our normal time of 7:30 moving forward, which is the next show will be the 20th, Wednesday, November 20th. Jesus, it's already November. So just for today, the show is at 3 p.m., but we will resume our normal time starting not next Wednesday, but the 20th. So I'm psyched about today's show simply because as a coach and as a mental health counselor, I think it's important to really take conscious and continuous steps towards personal development that constantly keep us on our toes and living our best lives. And that's really simply the intention of the shows and most of my shows, really focusing on self-development and taking steps to live your best lives. So I'm honored to have a friend of mine with me today, a sister in spirit, Cynthia Santiago, also a coach and a clinician who will speak about her experience both from a personal standpoint and that of dedicating her life's work to empowering others to find their happy and also to help others shine their light brighter than what it already is. So today's show is about the body's biggest organ, the skin, right? So I coined today's show, loving the skin you're in, because you're not going to get another skin. We're not going to get another skin. We're going to live in it for as long as we know ourselves. So with age, it will loosen up a bit, but unfortunately, there are lotions and potions to help with that. Unfortunately, improving our inner selves, right, there are lotions and potions. But improving our inner selves is really our individual responsibility. And while doing the work can be daunting, it is necessary for personal growth. So today's show is about what can we do to improve our inner, our mind, our soul, our spirit. So sit back, wiggle into yourself a bit, hug yourself, put your heart in your loving heart if you need to. Let's talk about loving yourself more. You can never love yourself too much. And as typical of my shows, I want to reference some inspirational quotes relevant to the topic that we will be discussing for the show. And the second is give individuals who may be joining us live a little bit of time to join us. So let's move along. The first quote is from Socrates, and it says, let him who would move the world first move himself. Let him who would move the world first move himself. The next one is, if you want to change the fruits, you will first have to change the roots. If you want to change the visible, you must first change the invisible. And that's by P. Harv Eker, which is the author of Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. The next one is, as human beings, our greatness lies not so much in being able to remake the world. That is the myth of the atomic age, as in being able to remake ourselves. That was from Mahatma Gandhi. Again, as human beings, our greatness lies not so much in being able to remake the world. That is the myth of the atomic age, as it is being able to remake ourselves. I just have two more. If you're under the impression you already have already perfected yourself, you will never rise to the heights you are no doubt capable of. If you are under the impression you have already perfected yourself, you will never rise to the heights you are no doubt capable of. That's unknown. That quote is unknown. Next one is, the best among us are not more gifted than the rest. They just take small steps each day as they march towards their biggest life. The best among us are not more gifted than the rest. They just take small steps each day as they march towards their biggest life. Actually, I have one more, which is very simple, but yet very powerful. If you want to lead an extraordinary life, find out what the ordinary do. If you want to lead an extraordinary life, find out what the ordinary do. So we're going to move on. I believe this is the essence of the intention of the show, really, like I said before, to learn from the ordinary in hopes of inspiring you to lead extraordinary lives. And in essence, I believe we already are extraordinary people simply because we exist and we're created by a higher power. Again, I want to thank you and acknowledge you for joining us this Wednesday afternoon to Purposeful Conversation by my monthly radio show, where I speak to ordinary people about their triumphant and extraordinary personal story and life work. If this is your first time listening to my show, a bit about me. Again, my name is Jose Alvino, a life purpose and empowerment coach. And before I proceed, I want to introduce our guest, Ms. Cynthia Santiago. Remember, if you have a question for either of us, you can call us at any point during the show at 646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397. And if you can't stay on for the entire show, again, this is posted on social media, and you can always come back to Block Talk Radio and search for Purposeful Conversation, and the show will be archived, as many others are. Begin by me telling you a bit more in detail about this phenomenal woman. Cynthia is a transformational empowerment coach, an inspirational and motivational speaker, a thought leader, and a happiness expert who believes in helping people tap into the unlimited possibilities of life to help them realize their personal and professional excellence. That commitment has guided her 20-year career, where she has helped hundreds of people transform their personal and professional lives by supporting them in addressing their challenges, building their coping skills, and perhaps most important, recognizing their own inner strength and resiliency. In her deepest calling to see people create the lives they were truly meant to live and have optimum well-being and happiness, Cynthia founded Restoring Every Aspect of Living, and the acronym REAL, Inc., where she offers coaching services as well as workshops, development programs. She's also the founder of Latina Wellness, where she offers services that are uniquely designed to address the multiplicity of cultural influences in the Latina communities. With her visionary thinking, Cynthia is clear that helping people live their authenticity and create better lives for themselves, their families, and their community is critically important. As a skilled clinician, facilitator, and positive psychology practitioner, Cynthia has played a crucial role in supporting and training hundreds of professionals to effectively deal with the intensity of their work and find ways to flourish even in challenging work environments. She has conducted a wide range of professional development workshops that include leadership training, cultural responsiveness training, and how to cultivate a positive and happier work environment. Spreading her message of optimal wellness for the mind, body, and spirit, Cynthia maintains her own blog site, latinawellness.com, and is a contributing writer and wellness expert for VidaVibrante.com. In 2012, Foxy.com chose Cynthia as one of the top 6 Latina health bloggers, and most recently she was featured as one of the top 10 Latina health and fitness bloggers in Latina magazine. Cynthia has also appeared in numerous media outlets, including NBC Latino and NBC Visiones. She is a licensed clinical social worker. She received her Master's of Social Work degree from Fordham University and her BA from Hamilton College, and is one of Asia Institute's faculty members. So, Cynthia, obviously very impressive. Welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Jose. Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here speaking with you today.
I don't know.
If you heard me giggling in the beginning.
I did.
You always make me laugh. And one of the things I really love about being around you is that it always reminds me how important humor is and how important it is to our health and well-being to make sure we laugh every day.
Oh, thank you. And I couldn't agree more. You know, sometimes it's like, it's funny, the thing about authenticity. When do you inject humor and when do you not? And it's refreshing, and I appreciate that because it just speaks to the testament that you should just be authentic and be yourself. You know, you never know how others may receive it. So thank you for that, and thank you for being here today. So, Cynthia, you and I talked a bit about your personal story and the reasons why you decided to dedicate your life work to empowering people, particularly women, and helping them find their voice. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, as I was explaining to you, and I've explained in many of my past speaking engagements, is that I actually came from very difficult circumstances. I was raised in a home where there was domestic violence, and I had to learn how to really stand in my own power and how to be authentic to who I was. Because when you grow up in an experience like that, it is often about not voicing who you are and not being in your true sense of self, because there's always a sense of danger, and there's a sense of, if I speak this right now, it could be harmful to someone, or it could be harmful to my mother in this case, who was the recipient of the abuse. And I have tremendous respect for my mother and have come to really understand the circumstances that put her in the situation she was in. But I was also deeply aware and very keen from an early age that I really didn't want to have that be the circumstances of my life. And so very early on, I started looking at ways that I could have my life be different. And as a child, I felt very powerless. But as an adult, I felt like, you know what? I don't have to repeat any of what I saw. And I actually have the ability and the know-how to do this differently. And so I really went on a journey very early on in my life of what I call being a seeker. And as a seeker, I was looking to do things differently than the way I saw them done. And again, not taking away anything from the tremendous job that I believe my mother still did as a mother, I really just didn't want the repetition of that cycle in my life. I didn't want to carry it on in any way, and I didn't want it to be a legacy that I passed on in any way. And so I was very intentional to get an education, to make sure that I had a way of having my life be different, although I wasn't really sure what that was going to look like. I didn't really have anyone around me as a model, but there was something innate in me that was like, you know what, this doesn't have to be this way. There was some sense of knowing that I really do believe comes from our divine relationship with Source, with God, with whatever that might be that one calls it, whether it's within your own spirit even, but knowing that things could be done differently and that I could live my life in a different way. And that really set me on this journey of inquiry, you know, seeking knowledge, wanting to learn new things, seeing how other people see things, seeing if things were different other places, and really moving from there.
So it sounds like it was a very conscious decision, but at the same time, there was this sense of intuition, there's a greater guiding force that kind of guided you to a place where you know that, you know, you definitely didn't want to replicate what you saw growing up.
Yeah, and it was really about questions. For me, it was always being in the sense of a question of what could I do differently? How could my life be different? Why does this look like this? But why is that happening? That seems unjust. Why should that be that way? So I had a lot of questions, and I never stopped asking the questions until I felt I had some answers.
So that's what you alluded to, being a seeker, which is very powerful. And it's interesting because, you know, it's and I've shared with you in the past shows that I also have come from a domestic violence background. And I also, which was a very interesting piece of my work in the past, I also provided funding for court-mandated batterers So, you know, I think part of coming from that type of environment, it's a lot about choice. You know, there's people who come from that environment and decide to replicate the victim mentality, you know, both men and women. And then there's men who like myself, who come up growing up being that. That is also a choice. I'm not going to be that way. So it's interesting how choice and seeking answers is also a big part of deciding in which spectrum you're going to be fall in relation to witnessing such an environment.
Yes, exactly. And I think the key word you use is whether we take on a victim role or whether we decide to have our life be different. And, you know, one of the ways that I think that was most powerful for me and what I often do with my clients is to really look at where the experience is led. So, for instance, you and I both come from these environments of domestic violence growing up, and we then turn that into work. So
right.
one of the things I ended up doing was actually counseling battered women and children. And I did that very early on in my career. That was one of my first experiences of helping to empower women and helping to empower children and families. So, you know, you do have choices, and you can do a couple of things with your negative experiences or your what we call bad experiences. You can say, oh, I'm a victim of those circumstances, and that's going to dictate what my life looks like. Or you can look at it and you can go, well, that was not a great experience to go through. I don't wish that on anybody. I'm not going to lie and say, oh, yeah, well, you know, that was my experience. I'm happy for that experience. But what I will say is that that experience informed who I became. It helped me to stand in a different place. It helped me to break some cycles in my family. And it also then became the crux of my work and how I could help others and help me build empathy for when people were in disempowering situations and how to help them find their voice and stand in their power and stand in their authenticity of what they wanted for their lives, right?
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love the fact that there's always positives in that one can extract from even bad or negative situations. I mean, empathy, you use the word empathy, which is a huge, huge word, and it's something that a lot of us exercise when we're working with people, or even, you know, either be working or relating to people, the sense of empathy of where a person has been in relation to where we have been ourselves. So, but I know a lot of your individual work and with clients has a large personal growth and self-development component. And during the past couple of years, our society and collective consciousness has shifted a bit in terms of focusing on these constructs, particularly as it relates to living our best lives. Talk to us about your personal journey of being intentional about your self-transformation, something you started doing many, many years ago, which we kind of covered a little bit a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah, I consider myself part of a collective of people on this planet that's really helping to move the planet into a different, like you said, a different sense of consciousness and awareness. And for me, I really believe that that has been my calling on this planet and the calling of the work that I do. But I did have to get very intentional about it. So like many, I hit my mid-20s, and I started having questions about what I was doing with my life. Like, what meaning did it have? What was I going to do? What kind of goals was I going to set for myself? But a big part of what happened for me, too, is that I went on a very deep spiritual journey. Because of my childhood as well, I was pretty much turned off to any kind of religion and really didn't want to be part of any kind of organized religious system. And that left me in a void, a bit of a void in terms of finding what it meant to have a relationship with spirit and to have a relationship with what I considered God and source. And so I actually I did what I often recommend to people, which is I actually just started asking questions. And part of my questions were, what is the right fit for me and who I am as a person and what I see my place in the world to be? And so I actually ended up becoming an initiated priestess in the Yoruba Lukumi tradition. I'm a priestess of Obatala. That is what resonated with me and what spoke to me. It was also a huge cultural piece for me because it helped align me back to what I feel are like my people in the sense that as a Puerto Rican woman, I have a wide array of ancestry that is African, Arawak and Spanish. And so I really embraced all those parts of myself and what I call reconciled it, because that history between those people is actually quite conflicted. And as we know, there was the domination and the annihilation of two of those cultures as a result of what the Spanish did. And yet that's all part of me. It's all embedded in me. And so I really looked at looking at what I could take away that was right from all of it, and the right parts of it for me were that culturally I came from this very rich, ancient African tradition. I came from people that honored the earth. I came from people that were of God and really looked to be of community and really fostered integrating spirituality into our daily living so that it's not this separate entity where I got up and went to church on Sunday only, but that it became a way of living and being. And how did I then take all of that and use it and move in the world so that it's constantly in my awareness and it's not something that I just do once in a while, but it's something that I keep present in my awareness at all times. So I'll give you a concrete example. I live in New York City, right? You know how crazy it gets here sometimes. It's very hectic, it's loud, it's noisy, it's crowded, people are rushing all the time. And I have to be very intentional in how I'm moving in all of that. And so I'll be on the street, and I'll be like on 34th Street, which gets really, really crowded sometimes.
Oh, Lord. All the time, right?
Yeah. Exactly right. And I'll walk down the street and someone will like rush by me and crash into me. And I'll tell you, in the old days, I used to be like, God damn it, this person. Like, that's all very real. And that hasn't necessarily gone away. But what I do is practice awareness so that if I see myself getting to that place, I'm like, okay, deal, what is that really about? All right, crashing around, that's their stuff. You stay, my godfather likes to tell me, stay in your lane. And my lane is, even in this chaotic New York City, I would like to practice inner peace. I would like to stay calm within myself. I would not like to be reactionary to other people. And that's what I mean by practicing my spirituality and my own transformational growth in everything I do. So that it's not that I'm trying to be perfect, because I'm not, but what I am doing is being aware of how I'm interacting. And when I find myself going to a place that I don't like being, not because of anybody else, but because within me it doesn't feel good, that I say to myself, okay, what's really going on here? And I actually, again, we're kind of going to come back to that key word, choice. I have a choice right now. And I have a choice to either get snippy and nasty too, or I have a choice to go into my best self and allow that to move past me.
I love it. Now, you know, I consider myself a seeker as well, and obviously based on what we're discussing, and you rightfully own that as well. And I know that there's people who are listening and will listen, who probably are seekers as well or well on their way. And, you know, when we're seeking, when we find the answers, it's very fruitful to kind of step back and talk about how they got there, right? But in mm-hmm. your experience, whether it be personal or with clients that you have worked with or are working with, what do you think is the most difficult part of intentionally, because it's not easy work, of intentionally doing soul searching work and digging through yourself with the goal of growing as a person? What is you think is the most difficult part of that, you know, necessary but yet daunting process?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the most difficult part, which is why a lot of people stay away from it, is what I call looking in the mirror. You know, that part of us, those parts of us that we don't really like, those parts of us that we know are not serving us best, those parts of us that are full of fear and anger and are still living in victimhood or living in the past of what people did to us. Those are the parts that are really hard to deal with because emotionally it's not comfortable, you know? Mm. Who wants to deal with the book? Who wants to deal with the pain of it? Who wants to really dig down deep and go, that's not such a nice part of you. Hello, can we do something about that?
Right, right, right.
That does require being in not just an uncomfortable place, but being sometimes in a place of pain. And what I often say about that is that if we can sit with the pain, eventually it kind of clears away. But if we keep pushing it down and we don't look at it and we don't get intentional about working with it, then all we're doing is what that analogy of pushing a ball down into water, right?
Mm-hmm,
you take a ball
mm-hmm.
and you hold it on the water, and what happens as soon as you take your hand off of it?
I'm going to come right back up.
It pops right up, right? And the harder you push it down, the more force you actually give it so that it gains velocity and shoots up even harder. And that's what we're doing when we're not being intentional about working on ourselves and working on our own pain and discomfort. What we're doing is pushing the ball down, and eventually that ball pops up so big and hard that it's actually much harder to deal with because it's usually having some kind of negative or destructive impact in our lives, and it's actually keeping us from living extraordinary lives. Because you can't live in an extraordinary life if you're living in pain and fear. Can't. It's very hard to do.
That's interesting. You're right. It's kind of like a tsunami, like shaking up a soda bottle, opening it, it's going to explode. And I think mm-hmm. that, yes, a lot of it is it's fear-based. It's easier not to be honest with ourselves. I think sometimes it's easier to be dishonest and not really look in the mirror and deal with the ugly parts. Because when that ball does pop up, that's when people are in damage control and apologizing, and I didn't mean it, I couldn't have done that. When
right,
a lot of it has
right.
to do, yeah, you looking in the mirror. Yeah. Now,
trying to clean something mm-hmm. up because it's such a mess now, right? Like, it was a little bit of a mess, and you could have probably wiped it up, and now it's turned into a big mess that needs much more, much more.
Because damage, yeah, it needs damage
right?
control. It's like you're running around trying to, you know, fix this situation that kind of like the analogy of the ball. This ball had shot up a couple of, you know, feet up in the air, and it's the same thing as a problem. It's just like a tsunami. It just spreads, and you're like, oh, my God, what do I do? I need to do some damage control.
Yeah, and I'm going to say this. I'm going to go out even further on this. I'm going to take it one step further. That, and I'll be specific about this because your show is very much about this, Jose.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That if we are not being intentional about dealing with our inner life, because our outer life is a direct reflection of our inner life. That was, like, even some of the quotes you were giving in the early part of the show, I'll
mm-hmm.
say that again. Our outer lives is a direct reflection of our inner life. So if we are not tending to our inner self, we are actually not living in our best self. We're not living the lives we're meant to live. And so it's not just about cleaning up the mess. It's about, are you living the best life you could be living? Are you waking up excited? Are you feeling like your life has purpose and meaning? Are you finding joy? Like, it's just, so I'm really comfortable, and I don't need anything to shake up my comfort. I go to work, I come home, I watch TV, I'm good. And I'm saying that it is our divine right on this planet to live extraordinary lives, not just okay lives. And one of the ways we start to do that is by really looking at our inner self, because that helps us to then create what we want on the outer world.
I couldn't agree more, and it's a perfect divine order of this next question, right? Because, again, trying to do the work and live in our skin and love the skin that we're in and really, you know, focus on the inner, you know, I've been studying the work of Dr. Brené Brown, who is an expert on vulnerability and shame and other issues that people really don't want to deal with as well. But my eyes have really opened up towards the power of being vulnerable. What role do you think vulnerability plays in consciously creating change within yourself?
Yeah, I love Brené Brown. I actually use her work a lot, and I've been studying her for about a year and a half as well. And, you know, the thing, she has a quote, and it says that vulnerability is the I believe it's something like it's the innovation or the creation of new things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know I just totally messed up that quote, so forgive me, Renee.
Okay,
but
you paraphrased it. It's all right. You're being vulnerable. You're being vulnerable, so I don't think she'll mind.
Exactly. And that's exactly it, Jose. Like, just that right now. Because if we keep trying to be perfect, if we keep walking around in armor, it is incredibly difficult to really consciously create anything, because you're not being true to what's going on for yourself. And, you know, there's another piece of this that I think is so poignant, is that when we allow ourselves to be vulnerable, it actually allows other people to be their true selves with us as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in that creation of being our authentic self and allowing for others to be authentic, we actually get to acknowledge each other's humanity, and then we get to help each other and support each other in ways that we don't do if we walk around in the state of, oh, I can handle everything and this has to be perfect before I do it. You know, I'll tell you examples of this that came up in my own life. I, for many years, did not do my writing because I was so afraid of allowing other people to know my inner pain and to also expose myself in any way to potential criticism, right?
Right.
And so, oh, my God, what if people read this and they don't like it? Or, oh, my God, what if I go to a speaking engagement and I don't speak so well? Or, oh, my God, what if? And that fear of making myself vulnerable in the world was actually keeping me paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to do it. Like, I'm not going to worry about whether it's perfect. I'm not going to worry about whether I dot every I and cross every T. I'm just going to go do it. And if I fall flat on my face, so be it. But you know what? When they have looked at people who are dying and they study people that are dying, you know those people never regret what they did. They always regret what they didn't do. Right? It's always what they didn't do.
Exactly.
So we can only go out there and try new things and do new things and go for our dreams and our goals if we allow ourselves to be vulnerable and we go, you know what, okay, I might not do this perfect, that's okay. You know, it's not about perfection. It's about being your authentic self, because that's really what people care about. They don't care if you speak perfectly or if you write perfectly. They care about whether what you're bringing them is true and sincere.
Right. And you're right. And I think that, you know, the fact that when you're being yourself, that resonates with people. You know what I'm saying? It's just something that people, it's just this energy, right? When people can know when you're BSing, it's just this thing that we have, this radar that we can just know when someone's not being truthful and authentic. So, and you're right, in terms of deathbed, and I know I've worked with seniors for the past 15 years, and I've been in their world. I've coexisted in a world where that happens a lot. And no one says, I shouldn't have tried what I tried. You know, everyone is always more about, you know, in their deathbed, you know, I'm glad that I went for it. It's better to have tried and lost than not have tried at all. But
exactly.
The question, my next question is for you is, I'm of the belief of it, for an individual doing the work, right, also brings up, you know, a situation in one's life or people that may require deep processing and understanding in order to create personal breakthroughs, you know, shifts or changes. You know, people who are doing the work, who are really working on themselves, who are looking in the mirror, other things pop up. Particularly other people, what role, if any, do you think forgiveness plays, either forgiveness towards yourself or others, during our never-ending process of working on ourselves and being our best selves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think forgiveness is a critical part of it. As much as allowing yourself to be vulnerable, forgiveness is a huge piece of it because it is very hard to move into the direction you want to go and live the life you want to live if you're holding on to resentment and anger. And sometimes you're right, that resentment and anger is towards ourselves, and sometimes that resentment and anger is towards others. Now, this is what happens oftentimes, and I see this come up with clients a lot. Forgiveness is a big piece of this, is that when they are discussing people that have caused them some kind of pain in the past, they often feel that if they forgive that person, they're letting them off the hook. That somehow they're saying, what you did to me was so wrong, and if I forgive you, then I'm actually letting you get away with it. And what I often say to clients is, you're not letting them off the hook. You're letting yourself off the hook.
Mm.
They have to deal with their own karma about what they did to you. They have to deal with looking in the mirror and knowing that they did something to you. They have to deal with all of that. But as long as you are holding on to anger and resentment, it's very hard for you to have an open heart and to allow for the things that you want in your life to move in. And so you're not letting anybody off the hook for yourself when you allow give others, you're not, that doesn't mean you're excusing what you did. See, that whole thing of like, you know, forgive and forget, I think is what gets people kind of caught up. Nobody's saying forgive someone who's wronged you so deeply that you have to then have a relationship with them.
Right.
Nobody's
right.
saying forgive somebody who wronged you so deeply that somehow you're saying that what they did to you is okay. No. But what you are saying is, I'm not giving you any more power over me, because as long as you are allowing yourself to be in any way directed by somebody, what somebody else did to you, you are actually disempowering yourself. And so the forgiveness part is about allowing you to be in your power. But then there's the other piece, which is forgiving ourselves, that I actually think is probably even tougher for many people. And I see this come up in working with clients a lot and coaching clients, is that they're often much harder on themselves than they are on others or what they would be with anybody else in that given situation. And so forgiveness says, listen, I've learned for oneself, I learned what I needed to learn from this situation. I could have done this a different way, and moving forward, I would like to do it a different way, but I understand that that is the past, and all I have now is my present and perhaps my future to correct whatever things weren't working for me. But that part of that journey of whatever it is you need to forgive yourself on has been part of your humanity, has been part of your evolution and growth, and has been part of your life lessons.
Right. I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, it's like that quote, you know, when you're the space of not forgiving, you always think it's about the other person. It's about you as well. And these blocks exist. And one of the biggest blocks is resentment, you know, and it's like that quote that I think it was from Dr. Dyer, that resentment is giving up the hope that the past could have been any different. I don't know who said that. But it's like, you know, we have to get to that space where we would forgive a person. No one's saying, I'm going to go have lunch with you or take you out to dinner, perhaps. You know what I'm saying? But it's kind of releasing that energy that has captivated me based on perhaps what you did do or a lot of times what you didn't do in my life or for me as a parent or a sister or a brother.
Exactly.
So I agree with you 100%.
Because we create emotional blocks for ourselves when we are holding on to resentment and anger. That's really what I try to help people understand, that block. So for instance, if you're a woman and you've had a really difficult relationship with your father, like that'll start to show up as emotional blocks in fostering a relationship with a potential partner. So it's not about letting your father off the hook. It's about letting yourself off the hook so you can develop a nice, healthy relationship with somebody.
Mm-hmm. So you can move on. Now,
exactly.
You know, not everyone that may be listening or will listen to the show knows what doing the work looks like, right? Similarly, others are still in different stages of their personal growth. What would you tell someone who knows that they want to go on this path of enlightenment or wants to go in it on a deeper level or wants to improve what they already are doing? What insights can you offer them?
Yeah, I really believe, again, I'll bring us back to that secret part, like what is it as an individual that you are interested in? Even when it comes to spirituality. I've not met one person yet who doesn't have some kind of interest, right? So whether it's that you go try a meditation class or whether you start having conversations with people that you trust, whether it's that you say, you know what, I'm going to go and try this course at like one of the places that I often know about, like Kripalu or the Open Center here in New York City. You know, it's about exploration. It's about being fearless and saying, I'm just going to go and try some new things and see what resonates for me. Because I really feel this in my heart of hearts today, and I've seen it time and again within my own life, but in the lives of my clients, that when they start to ask these questions, it's because it's time to begin the work.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're sitting with those questions of, how do I start transforming my life, or what can I do to grow, or how do I become more spiritually enlightened, it's because it's time for you to start doing that work. And so really all it requires is some action steps. And the action steps can be quite simple, like I said, like going to take your first course or going to take your first meditation class, whatever that might be, that begins to expose you to the thing that you are interested in. Because you can't sit in your house on your couch and expect for this stuff to just show up.
There's no reindeers that are going to show up.
No. You know, as much as I would like to believe in the fairy godmother, she's not just going to show up in the house. Like, you actually have to take the action steps.
Right, the initiative. I agree. Now, I believe that going through, you know, conscious life, and I want your opinion on this, I believe that going through conscious life changing transitional periods, and we talk about development and growth and living your best life. But when it comes to life-changing transitional periods in our lives, it requires sacrifice and sometimes a steely decision-making process. For example, deciding to create your job because it does not feed your soul or is not on purpose with what you really want to do with your life, or leaving a relationship romantic or otherwise, because sometimes you want to divorce some friends or colleagues, or even decided to go to back, right? You know, it's true.
I love sometimes that, divorce your friends.
Yeah, sometimes you're like, I got to, you know, we need to get a divorce. Thank God there's no paperwork required. But, you know, sometimes relationships, we think about getting, you know, leaving a relationship that's only romantic, but there's relationships that we have that are also not serving us. And that's a difficult thing to do, to leave those type of relationships. But even deciding to go back to school later in life, those are some examples. What do you think are the most common blocks, right, that prevent, because I think living in the skin you're in or living your best life is also about making some really tough decisions. What do you think are the most common blocks that prevent a person from taking a certain leap in their lives?
Okay, so I'm gonna give you the answer all in one word. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Fear. F-E-A-R. And it's always about fear. I haven't seen it be about anything else. Now, there's stuff underneath the fear that we can talk about, but it's always about fear. So whether it's fear, so for instance, if you're in a relationship, if it's fear about leaving the relationship because you don't think you'll find somebody else, or I've had people say, well, I won't be able to survive financially without my partner. That's about fear, right? Like fear of security. I can't leave my job because I don't know how I'm going to pay my bills. Again, fear of security or having a certain standing. I've had clients who actually even had the money to leave, but they were to leave a job, for instance, that was really toxic and unhealthy, and it was about the fear of losing some kind of status, right? So their profession is a certain status that they work towards, and now they're finding that they're very unhappy in that work. So how do they leave that and still maintain who they are, about their identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but underneath the fear, though, and this is where the work you and I do,
mm-hmm.
of coaching and helping to get to the inner work, is what does that fear really translate into? And so that fear is not just a fear of something happening, but is often a fear of disapproval, of not being loved, of people not understanding what we're about to do. It's a need. It's an underlying need of something, and an understanding that one can meet that need for themselves, that's not a need that has to come from the outside often.
Mm-hmm.
But we've gotten so conditioned to believe that all of this stuff is from the outside, that it is external, that other people, that our happiness even is contingent upon the outside, the external factors, that
right.
It's often difficult for people to understand what's driving the fear. So you got to get to the emotional root of the fear. And for everybody,
right,
that's a little bit different, right? So for someone who, for instance, wants to do the kind of work we're doing, but is right now in corporate America but feels this calling to go out and coach people and do speaking engagements, but has this terrifying fear of speaking in front of people, which I actually used to have.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really so much fear of talking in front of people. It was the fear of, it was this feeling that somehow I wouldn't be enough, that I wouldn't be good enough, and that I would be ridiculed or humiliated in some way. Right? So you have the fear, and then you have the emotion behind the fear.
Right.
And when I made the connection that, you know what? One, there's no other way to do this except to do it. there's no way to get through, right? But to actually go do it. But then to understand that what I was really looking for was approval, and that I didn't need that approval from the outside world. I just needed that approval from within myself. That's where the fear started to dissipate enough that I was able to go and do it. And, you know, even now I still get a little worked up whenever I have speaking engagements or like a radio show like this. But it's not, it's more like a nervous energy. It's not something that's so big that it actually paralyzes me in any way.
Right. But I think that that would be normal. I mean, you know, it's like you said, it's not a paralyzing fear. It's more like an anxious, like, you know, wow. And it's more of an excited. I know that in my situation, you know, it's like you're excited, but you're anxious. It's not necessarily something that's going to paralyze you.
But you have people that are not living their dreams because their fear is actually paralyzing them.
Right.
You know,
like
we call it paralysis.
Yeah, paralysis by analysis. But I think that the thoughts lead to certain feelings, and those feelings lead to certain behavior. You know, what you think is going to make you feel a certain way. You know, well, I don't think they're going to like me, and then you feel less than. Which, well, you're not going to go for it. You know, your behavior is not going to be something that you're going to go out and create something and make something out of it. Now, and I think a lot of part of it, and I want to get your feedback on this, is that I realized that, you know, in working with different people in my career path, a lot of people, even when you talk about their values or their beliefs, really have a difficult time really finding the words, you know, whether it be loyalty. I'm a person who values loyalty and honesty and creativity, or my belief system is such and it's this and it's that. How important do you think is to do a needs assessment or a belief system assessment to understand and know what your value and belief system is, and helping you begin to love the skin that you're in?
Oh, I think it's critical. I don't think we move forward without it, to be honest. And that's because our beliefs drive everything. Our beliefs drive our behaviors. Our beliefs drive what we manifest in the world. It is those core beliefs that have us thinking about ourselves in a certain way. Those core beliefs actually impact our mood and how we're functioning in the world. So until we really look at our belief system and what it is that we believe about ourselves and what we believe about other people and what we believe about our place in the world, it is incredibly difficult to move forward and to move out of situations or circumstances where you're not thriving, you know?
Right.
So one of the things I do with all my clients is I tell them, we're about to shake up your belief system. And I'm not going to give you a belief system, and I'm not trying to even change your belief system, but I want you to be fully and consciously aware of your belief system, because it is your belief system that is driving your very behavior and what you believe your place in this world is. And so until you examine that and look at it and understand where it came from, because most of our beliefs and truth, we formed around age 7.
Mm-hmm.
And those beliefs are still driving what we do in the world and how we behave. And they're not necessarily even beliefs that you're consciously aware of. Like, how many people sit around and go, I'm really going to look at my belief system now?
Right.
Most people are not having that conversation. That conversation may start as a result of going through a therapist or a coach. Sometimes, you know, after you've done the work, like, I have that conversation a lot now because the people in my world are very like-minded, and we sit around talking about our beliefs all the time. But I would say in the general population, that's probably not happening to the extent that they're examining their beliefs. They have a value system, but they're not examining the belief under the value and where the belief came from.
Right.
Right? So the beliefs are often passed down through our families. The beliefs are given to us by society, the media. We come to identify certain things with certain people, and then we think that that's how the world needs to operate. And really what I say to people is, how about we explore some other possibilities? Is there another way to look at this? Where did you get that belief system from? Are you even aware of why you believe that? Is that something someone told you, or is that a conclusion you came to on your own? And what in your experience has, become evidence of that belief? Because then, you know, the interesting thing about belief is that that whole self-fulfilling prophecy, we have a belief that drives a behavior, and so we then go out in the world and keep giving ourselves evidence that that belief is somehow true.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like saying, is that true or is that your truth? And I think
right.
that the beauty about belief system and even your value system is that you can always change them. You know, you can always say, I don't like that, or that belief system doesn't serve me, and change it. So it can be something that can definitely be changed, it can be changed. Now,
I don't know if you do this with your clients, but I love to go, so how is that belief serving you?
Yeah, how is that serving you? Right, how is that serving? How is that serving you? And
how's that
and
helping
how
you
true
get
is
what
that?
You want?
Right,
right.
How true is that really? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, how true is that really? Are you, you know, it's true. You got to really look and encourage people to have this conversation with their friends also that they really trust. But, you know, is that an interpretation? Are you assuming that? You know, is that, what is that limited belief? Where is that coming from? And how true is that? So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, I know that we're running out of time, and I have a couple of more, but I'm just going to choose for when I think the ones that are going to resonate with some of the listeners in the topic at hand. So professionally, you know, you do a lot. You're versatile, individual work and group work and working with organizations and writing and motivational speaking, you know. And I think that what I remember once I was doing a speech, and you know, one of the things I like to say to people who work helping people, whether it be coaches or therapists or case managers or whoever, is that we're really nursing a nation, right? And we're doing the sources work or God's work and the universe work.
I love that, yes.
We're nursing a nation. You know, this is real hard work. And I think part of this work is, obviously, as you know, is really walking the talk. We have to be our best selves in order to help others be their best selves. And in knowing that we have to walk the talk with individuals and doing this nursing a nation work, how do you feed your spirit? How do you fill your tank? Because it does take a lot to give ourselves so much in working with clients or in fields and helping
people. Yeah. Well, you know, I think you said it lovely, and I love that, nursing the nation, because it really, this work really is very intense and very beautiful and very giving, but it's also it can be very draining if we don't take really good care of ourselves. And one of the ways I take care of myself is a couple of simple things. I really make sure I get enough sleep. I don't think people understand how incredibly important that is. I also really make sure to eat my best most of the time, although I am, you know, I love some bad food now and then, as anyone does.
Yes.
And then the other piece is my spirituality. My spiritual life is very important to me. And so what does that look like? Very concretely is that I do pray and meditate every morning. I make sure to connect to my own inner spirit. I make sure to have quiet time that allows for me to just reflect. And I really do things that feed my spirit. So the things that I love to do in life, because I'm easily a workaholic if I allow myself to be, but I stay consciously aware that life is not just work, 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 that life is really meant to be enjoyed. And so I do things like I make sure to get together with friends. I love to dance, so I make sure to go dancing. I do the things that feed my spirit. I'm a creative person, so I do things that, like, make jewelry and things that foster that inner peace within me and put me into what we call a state of flow, which is, you know, a peaceful state where you're so intent on an activity, it feels really good for you. And so I am very consciously aware that in order to do this work and to help people be their best selves, I have to be my best self. I can't be a hypocrite, right? I mean, I could be a hypocrite, but it's not what I choose to do. I would not feel good about sitting in front of a client or talking to a large group of people or running a group and telling people, well, this is what you should be doing for yourself, if I'm not living that myself. And so one of the things I love about being a coach, Jose, and I'm sure this probably resonates for you, mm-hmm. is that it keeps the mirror in my face all the time. My clients are my mirror. They are constantly bringing awareness to me of what I even have to keep working
mm-hmm.
on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of they keep us in our toes. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, right.
Keep us in our toes. It's just like, and you're right, it can't be hypocrisy. I mean, it's just, you know, you have to, you know, even though I'm sure even this can be translated from a mother to daughter, mother to son or uncle, like, you know, they want to be the best that they can possibly be for their children or for their niece or for their nephew. If you're a boss, you want to be the best boss for, you know, your employees. If you're really in that space of living, you know, authentically or living, a certain life or not being a hypocrite of yeah. you know, walking the walk, you know, I'm sure that it translates into other relationships where an individual is of a place to inspire others or a place of authority, really. Can be a parent, mm-hmm. like I said. All right, so acknowledging that we all, you know, I want you to share a couple of words. Acknowledging that we all works in progress and development is a constant. And in thinking about your personal work and your work with your clients, what do you know for sure?
What I know for sure, what I know to be true in my heart of hearts and my deepest parts of my spirit, as I like to say, mm-hmm. is that in order to be our best selves and live our best life, we have to do the inner work. I know no way around that. I just don't. I don't know how anyone is truly in their authentic happiness, in sustainable happiness, in a place where they're really enjoying life, if they have not looked at themselves, if they have not become consciously aware of what's driving their behavior, if they are not working on their humanity and their own spiritual evolvement and growth.
I couldn't agree more. Now, Cynthia, lastly, and maybe we'll have you on the show again. I had so many different, you know, angles and questions that I have for you, and unfortunately we're running out of time. But lastly, and I'm sure that individuals who want to reach you, they should know how to reach you. So please let the listeners know how they can get in contact with you should they want to access you and or you or your work.
Yeah, so I have a website. It's latinawellness.com. They can also reach me through email at Cynthia, Cynthia, at latinawellness.com. I also have, I'm on Twitter as Latina Wellness, and I'm also on Facebook under Latina Wellness. So I work with all kinds of clients. But I am a Latina, and I'm very proud of it. So I do like to put that out there that I those are my Twitter handles and all that. But I am easily findable on Google as well.
Okay.
Just put in my name, Cynthia Santiago.
Fantastic, Cynthia. Cynthia, thank you for being here and sharing your personal story and for your insights and being candid as well, and for your insights into empowering ourselves and how to be better versions of our already fabulous selves. I wish you the best of luck moving forward personally and with all of your endeavors.
Thank you, Jose. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you as well.
Great. Now, as for me, Jose Alvino, you can reach me at info@josealvinolifecoach.com. Visit my website, www.josealvinolifecoach.com. Or you can also follow me on Twitter at Jose Alvino Coach. Please don't forget, we have many shows on Life Coach Radio Network, many, many shows. The next show will be tomorrow, and it's with Coach Leanne Parsons. It will be at 1 p.m., and she focuses on the many faces of adoption. So, again, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Cynthia. Until next time, and always, I think this is key to what we were discussing today, and always, which I always leave the last words for me, always remember that those who got to where they are began where they were. So no matter where you are in your life or where you want to be, just just realize that you know, whatever you want to accomplish or whatever changes you want to make in life, big or small, simply take a small step and take action. It's not that hard, I promise. So thank you again. Have a good afternoon and enjoy the rest of the week. Take care.